Quinta MacDonald had become increasingly concerned about her own condition of late. Her teeth, which she had once considered her best feature, had started loosening in her mouth and then falling out spontaneously straight into her hand. Ironically, her daughter, Helen, was losing her milk teeth at the same time. "I can stand the pain," Quinta later said, "but I do hate to lose my teeth. The upper ones are so loose they nearly hang." Following her new trouble, Quinta had started consulting Dr. Kniff, the kind dentist who had treated her sister Molly. Kniff had been working with Martland to treat Marguerite, so it was Kniff who arranged for Quinta to have Martland's special tests. And with her came her old friend, Grace Fryer, who now had no jaw trouble at all, who was apparently in good health, but whose back hurt worse with every passing day. One by one they came. Catherine, Quinta, Grace. They weren't ill like Sarah or Marguerite or Dr. Lehman. They weren't at death's door. They stayed still as Martland scanned their bodies with his electrometer, asked them to breathe into a tube, tested them for the telltale anemia that would betray what was happening inside their bones. To each, he said the same. "He told me," Grace remembered, "that my system showed the presence of radioactive substances." "He told me," Quinta said, "that my trouble was all due to the presence of radium." He told them that there was no cure. A deep breath was needed for that news. In. Out. "When I first found out what I had," Grace remembered, "and learned that it was incurable." She tailed off, but eventually continued. "I was horror-stricken. I would look at people I knew and I would say to myself, 'Well, I'll never see you again.'" They all had that same thought. Quinta, heading home to her children, "I'll never see you again." Catherine, breaking the news to her father, "I'll never see you again." For Catherine, though, the diagnosis brought relief too. "When the doctors finally told me that my test showed positive radioactivity," she remembered, "I was not as frightened as I thought I would be. At least there was no groping in the dark now. Instead, there was light. Glowing, glorious light. Shining, stunning light. Light that led their way into the future." "The medical examiner's diagnosis," commented Catherine Sharp with characteristic acumen, "furnished perfect legal evidence for a lawsuit." For too long, the women had waited for the truth. The scales, at last, were tipping against the company. The girls had been given a death sentence, yet they had also been given the tools to fight their cause, to fight for justice. The diagnosis, Catherine Sharp now said, gave me hope. Part 2. Power. Chapter 20. There was much to be done. Even before the summer was out, Dr. Martland had lent his voice to Catherine Wiley's campaign to amend the industrial compensation law. Yet the legal change was only part of it. For the girls, who now understood how unforgivably careless the company had been with their lives, the real question was how the firm's executives could have considered them expendable. Why didn't their basic humanity compel them to end the practice of lip-pointing?